Well, thanks everyone, and thanks to the Fundación Rafael del Pino for hosting this fantastic event. So, well, I'm very glad that today we have here one of the most successful Spanish entrepreneurs, tech entrepreneurs, and that is Ander Michelena, who recently sold for a very large amount of money his latest company.
I cannot talk about that amount.
But yeah, like, it would be great if you can introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your background first.
Well, basically, I'm an ex-investment banker, so nothing sexy, nothing related to technology at all. But in 2009, I decided to quit with my partner the bank that was working. I was working in London, in Morgan Stanley, in M&A. I quit that war, and I look at different business models that I thought would could work. As an investment banker, what I did is a very rational approach. I look at business models that were working in the U.S., see if there was something similar in Europe, and the other condition was there was nothing like that in Latin America. Like that, we went to an idea. We reduced the idea to four. One of them was TicketBiz, which is a marketplace where you can buy and sell tickets. We launched it in January 2010. And after 6 years, we grew to be serving tickets in 47 countries, over 400 employees, and recently sold the company to eBay.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Incredible. So, well, you have been launching this from Spain, but you grew it everywhere. But you have seen the evolution of what has happened in the Spanish tech ecosystem. So how do you see the current tech ecosystem here in Spain versus what you saw 5-6 years ago when you started versus how you see this developing into the future?
It's a completely different game. I mean, 5-6 years ago when we started, there was like 3 or 4 guys you would talk about being business angels and investing in this kind of project, but if you could count them with one hand, it was ridiculous. Now I see the ecosystem is much healthier. It has grown tremendously. There is a bunch of guys who invest in that are business angels who invest in projects. There is a bunch of new VCs that are coming. Last year, there was over 600 million invested in the VCs in Spain. That is not that much. You are based in the US. You know that's nothing compared to what is invested there, but it's a lot. It's 3 times more than we have the year before. So it's the ecosystem, I feel, is really growing. We can say that we have now an ecosystem. I would not say we have an ecosystem 6-7 years ago. So it's a really big change.
Yeah, and currently a lot of people talk about the unicorns. Everyone knows that those are tech companies that started in the last few years, but very rapidly they have a market capitalization or valuation of over $1 billion.
Yep.
That could be like easily a IBEX 35 company. So do you think that we are going to see unicorns popping in Spain, or do you think that you will only see mainly them in the US and some of them in the UK or other?
Well, I think unicorns is a reflection of the investment you have in the market, right? If the ecosystem continues growing, there is more projects that receive finance and they're still developing. At some point, yes, of course, we're going to see it. I'm positive about it. How long is it going to take? I don't know. There is a couple of companies that are close to that. Privalia was, everybody thought it was going to be the first one. It didn't made it to that club. You have Wallapop that is, nobody knows the latest valuation, but probably is around there somewhere. So there are some cases of companies, Spanish companies, that are already getting kind of their Alien Vault is another example, for example. So I'm quite confident that some of them will make it. I don't know if it's going to be in the next 2 or 3 years. Actually, I think there is a small bubble on the technology side that is popping in the U.S. and we'll see what happens in Europe. But at some point, of course, yes, it's going to happen.
Yeah. It's interesting that you're talking about whether there is a bubble or not. Yeah. But the reality is that if you look at the biggest companies in the world, they are not oil companies, they are not biotech companies, they are not car manufacturing companies, they are not banks, they are technology companies. Like the biggest company is Apple, the second biggest is Google, then you have Microsoft, then you have Facebook, and then you have Amazon, and then you have like the traditional companies like Citibank or Johnson & Johnson. So what do you think about that? Because now there are like even a new evolution of very large companies that are tech-driven, reinventing large companies, as people were saying before, Uber reinventing transportation, Airbnb reinventing traveling, and they are already like $30 billion, $50 billion, $80 billion in valuation. So what is your opinion about that? Do you think that you are going to see even more of that tech-driven giants, or is going to change at some point?
Well, technology is really accelerating at this time, so I really think technology is going to drive our life even more, and it's going faster and faster, so I don't think that changing that dramatically. That said, the current valuation of some of these companies, I think they are ridiculous. you look at fundamentals. I'm an ex-investment banker, what I'm going to say. So so I think there's going to be a bubble. We're in a moment of a bubble, so the only question for me is not if it's going to go down, but at what pace. Is it going to explode and it's going to enter into a recession, or is going to go slowly down and we'll see not growing, not those companies not growing in valuation, and a small reduction in the investment year by year. I don't have the answer to that, but for sure I think we're in a moment at the peak, and if you look at all the fundamentals, all the investment has been done year by year, we are at a moment that is at the peak of it. I saw data the other day that we have been 91 months in a row in positive growth in the US. This is the third longest time in history. There's only been two other times that have been over 100 months. So guys, if you look at historic data, it's not that far away.
And how do you compare that with China, right? Because in China, you are seeing also like a new company like Tencent, gaming companies, social networks that are very focused on China or Southeast Asian markets, and they are almost as big as the Americans, like Alibaba, right, and so on. So do you think that you are going to polarize like these large companies and having them only in the US and China or Asia, or do you see them coming up from Europe as well?
The problem for that is, well, the big difference between US, China, and Europe is US and China are unique markets, right? You launch a company, your market size in the launch a company in the US is the entire US. 300 million people with a very developed economy that can buy your products. In China, it's 1 billion, a little bit less money, but growing tremendously, right? So your market size is completely different. In Europe, the problem you have is you have no one market, you have 25 markets, and that makes completely different dynamic. When you launch a company in Europe, you need to think first, your local market, even, for example, in our case, in TKD, we're still very fast on going global. We launched, as I say, in 5-6 years, we launched 47 countries. But each one of the countries in Europe was a new launch for us. So you need to adapt the page. I'm not talking only about the translating the page, but you need to hire new local providers. You need to get transport, new transport agreements. You need to do everything. It's like we're starting, like opening a new business again. That's the big difference. That's why it's much harder for unicorns to raise in Europe, although I don't say it's impossible. It's happening right now. There is unicorns in Europe, right?
Yes, yeah, Spotify, Skype.
Exactly. Yeah. There is unicorns in Europe, but it's harder, and there will continue to be less unicorns in Europe as far as we don't have a common market, a real common market in Europe. That's my personal view.
Yeah. And now that you are talking about your challenges, one of the challenges to grow internationally in 47 countries, I have to say here that when I met Ander, it was probably 2009, 2010, after I graduated from MIT, that I was starting my first company in New York. But when I was coming here to Madrid, I remember meeting you in a very tiny office, very close to the Fundación. And you had probably...
You're around here, yeah.
Yeah, very, very close by. Yeah. Like probably you had 10 employees. Yeah. And as of this year, you had 400 employees.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that you had to overcome to go from 9 people in a small apartment here in Madrid to 400 people in multiple offices around the world in a period of 5 years, and being as young as you are without experience?
Definitely. I'm 33, so definitely. nobody prepared you for that, right? I mean, I didn't manage people before actually creating TKB, so it was my first experience as an entrepreneur, my first experience as a director as well. So it's hard. You learn on the job, right? It's really, you learn, and we will say, I'm going to say this one in Spanish, aprendes a hostias, but it's true. It is what it is. You get mistakes, you need to recognize them. If I have a key take out of what has happened, is that you need to learn what you are good at, realize that the sooner that you realize that is the better, and start getting people around, talent and people around that compliment you on the things that you are not that good. And I think that was one of the key things that we did at TKD very quickly. We realized that me and my partner, we both came from investment banking. We didn't know anything about e-commerce. We didn't know anything about the secondary ticketing market. We didn't think anything about marketing. So the first thing we did is hire people who knew about these things. We hired a couple of people that worked in the competitors, who knew how the companies were organized, who knew what they were doing, who knew about the secondary market. So that's, for me, when one of the key things I take out of this is, look, you need to realize what you're good at, what you're not good at, try to get the right talent on board as soon as possible.
And you had to innovate for your business, but now you are part of a much bigger technology company, sure. eBay, that acquired TicketBiz, I think it was less than 6 months ago, like 3 months ago probably.
Well, the closing, the announcement was in June, the actual closing was in August, so I've been officially working there for 3 months.
So can you talk a little bit about the differences for doing innovation in your own company, like a tiny company where you have control over everything, versus at eBay that is like thousands of people?
Yeah, well, it's very different. To start with, I have a boss. I didn't have a boss before, so right? So it's very, very different. You cannot do whatever you want. You need to go to ask permission for certain things. So that really changed the game. But also, it's harder to do innovation in big as companies. It's very hard because you try to, okay, we're going to do this that is new, but you need to go to a person who needs to approve it, and that person, nobody, the feeling I got is, it's harder to approve things because nobody wins anything on approving it. So it's okay, I don't approve it, you need to talk to these other guys. So you need to start going around the organization. At the end, you lose 2-3 weeks to approve something that before it would have been done. Okay, we're done it. That's it, right? So that's my biggest frustration so far, trying to navigate how it works inside eBay. I'm working on it, but my feeling is that it's much harder to innovate in bigger companies, and that's why startups are there, right? Because there is segments where in a small company you can organize it very efficiently and innovate, and that's why big companies acquire small companies like ours, right? Yeah. Just to actually get that gap that they weren't able to do by themselves.
Yeah. And now that you have become a role model to a lot of future entrepreneurs, many of them here in the room today, can you give any advice to the young entrepreneurs that are watching us today in streaming or here in the room?
Sure. I mean, a lot of people always tell me, oh, I don't know, I have an idea, but I don't know if it's the right time to do it. My key takeaway is you have an idea, or even if you don't have an idea, but you want to start something, just do it. I mean, the worst you can lose is a couple of years. You're going to be able, it's a good experience. Now, actually, Spain has completely changed. Before, it wasn't good seeing that you get out of the regular labor market. And because you wanted to start your own project, now it's actually a good sign that you have tried to do that, tried to create a project. It's seen good by companies. That's complete change, and that's something that has happened in the last 3 or 4 years. So you don't lose too much. You might lose some time, a little bit of money you invest on the project, but it's worth to try. It's not you're going to ask all your life what would have happened if I've tried, and it's a question that you don't want to have in 20 years, basically.
So just do it.
Exactly.
So we're going to open up to some questions. I don't know if anyone in the audience has questions. I think there are some mics around, and they can pass them all around.
You mentioned that you used to work in an investment bank. So my question is about the transition. And I think this will probably, you were talking about advice for entrepreneurs. What was the biggest difficulty going from working in an investment bank with lots of people to being by yourself, starting your own company? What were the biggest obstacles you faced, both personally and as a company?
Do you look at your account and the salary that wasn't coming in? That's one big one. no, really. It's a completely different environment, right? You are working like in an investment bank, you have a boss, and you basically you're not thinking on the strategy, on what to do. You are basically executing what they are telling you. And you go by yourself, you start a company, you need to think around everything, right? You need to think on the strategy, talk to investor, start hiring people, start developing the platform. So you are actually doing the job that 8 people should do. You at the beginning, you're doing it by yourself. You know that very well. So that's the hardest part, for sure. At the beginning, you are working as much as you work in investment banking for the first month without a single euro in your account, actually investing the money, right? So if you look at it rationally, it's not rational to do it. Like, why you're doing it? It's stupid, right? Actually, when I talked to my mom about, oh, I'm going to leave my job and go there, she was like, no, right? You are joking. Yes, I'm leaving. It's hard because it's not rational. It's not a rational decision. It's completely different. But it's something that is very personal. You need to know exactly what is coming. You need to know it's going to be hard. You need to know that creating a company is a roller coaster. There is ups and downs. And for me, the key was actually that I have a partner to start with. I think Iñaki did it by yourself, right?
I had also like my three companies.
You
I
have
had
a partner.
I had a partner in the second one, and now I have another partner.
Yeah.
My first company and the third company is like both from MIT as well.
Really, For me, it's very important. I don't know your experience about it, but to have somebody that when things are down, you can talk to and get it lower, and when things are great, you can celebrate with is perfect. So I would not start a company without a partner, but that's my personal feeling. I don't know what you think about that. Okay.
No, definitely, right? Like there are so many ups and downs that is like that motivation that when you are down, the other one is telling you, Iñaki, don't go down.
Exactly.
We're going to to make this happen, or like we're going to solve this problem. Don't worry.
Exactly.
If you have to suffer that by yourself on
it's
a Saturday
hard.
Evening, it's hard.
Yeah. Very, very hard. Exactly. Yeah.
So we have time for one or two more questions.
Yes, I have a question for Iñaki. Basically, when I mean, you said that for the entrepreneurs, they have to, when they have an idea, they have to go and just start it. When you started a startup, at which moment you say, okay, this is the beginning? Do you, it is when you receive the first investment, it is when you just go and register your company, at which moment you say with your partner, okay, now we start our company, we start our business?
It was for you, say Iñaki.
For me, like the most important one is when you are full time. Even, I mean, the salary, I didn't have a salary for 1 year. I had employees, we had raised a little bit of money. I didn't have a salary. So it's not when you have a salary, it's not when you have a product life, it's when you are full time spending like all the brain cycles, all your brain cycles thinking about that idea. Nothing else is distracting you.
I totally agree. I mean, we tried to start the TicketBiz, the previous project, working in investment bank. 3 months didn't really work. You couldn't do anything, right? I used all the weekends, whatever free time you have during the day, so pretty much nothing. It was impossible. So until you actually quit your old job, start focusing 100%, you are not really on it. I totally agree with Iñaki.
Yeah. One final quick question, or somewhere over here.
I have the mic. I'm Javier. Jimenez. I think I can rephrase his question, but to get some other information is, what was the key milestone that attracted funding to your company when you were so early in the development of the company?
You want me to ask one? Basically, I think one of the key skills that we have is basically to get our money. So we never have a single problem getting around funding. I mean, actually, we raised in this short ticket, it's 18 million. And we only involve a VC because they all enter in the same condition as everybody else. We didn't give any special condition, no preferred shares. They didn't have a member of the board. We always control, me and my partner control always the company. And but I think it's not a very common thing. It's very different. So for us, it wasn't a problem to get the money. Basically, when we went to investors, what they saw is, okay, you have a model that was working in the US because it was a copycat of a model that was working in the US. The model was out of the question. This model works. So it wasn't a question of if this model is going to work, it works. It was more a question, are you the guys to execute it? And I think investors realized that we were the guys to execute it, that they believe on us, and they were actually quite fast getting the right people to get, we knew how to do, and we were getting the right people to fill the gaps. So that was very important. That's why we never have a problem raising money. I don't know what your experience
maybe. Yeah, my experience in my three companies, the first company we raised $7 million in the US, the second company $3 million, and this latest one close to $10 million. Yeah. And we were very focused on building the company. And when you show results and you have milestones for the business, investors come to you. It's very, very common, right? If you are trying to convince them to give you money to do something else, it's much better to go with results and then they give you money for the next milestones. I think that we don't have time for anything else, but Ander, thanks a lot for
coming,
and remember everyone, just do it.
All right, thank you. Gracias, señor.